It's another coffee episode. I've got a couple of topics here. It turns out it was kind of a bit of a slow news week. So, our Saturday morning coffee sesh is going to be talking about some other things rather than like relevant things from this week. So, first thing I wanted to talk about was because it was kind of a slow week, I was able to do some more podcast planning and like work on some episodes. And so, I've got a lot of stuff going on in like my personal life, so I haven't had time to fully develop any new podcast episodes. But with the semester academically coming to a close this coming week, I'm going to be able to get a lot of these actually finished up and out, and most of these are already like somewhere in the production process. And I've got my coffee here this morning. Give me a moment. The first step, Mass Effect 2, I did manage to finish, and in fact, I'm like a third of the way through Mass Effect 3 already, but if you enjoyed the game journal for Mass Effect 1, the game journal for number 2 will be the next episode that's going to come out. And I'm going to focus it a little differently. I think this time what I want to do is I'm going to be focusing on like, instead of like broadly overall, like these are the story one, these are like the story project story arcs that I really liked and yada yada yada. I'm going to be focusing on like each character, and so I'll be talking about like what I enjoyed most about each character and like how I felt they best contributed to really that overall plot. And so I'll just be going about it just a little bit different, and then I'll go back to Mass Effect 1's format for Mass Effect 3. It's just because Mass Effect 2 is just like, it seems like it's entirely built and focused around, like, you're just putting together this squad for a suicide mission, and then you're going. Excuse the alarm there. I'm going to be doing a Steven Universe episode. I think I mentioned this last weekend, but I finished that show, and now I want to do an exploration of its themes through through its music. And so kind of doing a deep dive into how the different songs are so directly related to its themes of LGBTQ, of unhealthy and healthy relationships, of mental health, like anxiety and stuff. And so I'm really excited about this. I'm going to call Steven Universe a musical because I think that's what it is. This is like the first musical that I've like absolutely obsessed with, and I listened to his music more than I would like like at work and stuff. And so I think I've got a pretty good grasp on this. I just need to do a little bit more analysis of the different songs before it's done. And then the first guest we're going to have is actually my mom. So the mom episode, that's the title I'm going with. We're going to just sit down. I have a couple of guided questions, but I kind of just wanted to have it as a discussion. We're just going to talk about like my upbringing and just like the life we've lived and her life and like what shaped her as a person, who made her, you know, who she is, and just get some like perspective and understanding about the things that have shaped her life. And I think it's gonna be really good. My mom's you know, been through a lot, she knows a lot, and so I'm excited to talk to her. And we have some political and social differences. So even though we grew up and you know, we were so close growing up, we developed very different beliefs. And so I'm kind of interested to see, just like talk about our like differences in upbringing and seeing how that might have affected our beliefs of the world, and how we see things. And then this next one is kind of a NPR style. Give me a moment. And it's actually coming from an NPR episode. That's where the idea came from. Well, I want to talk about streaming services, like alternatives to Netflix, low or no cost, library access ones, niche platforms. Like I said, I'm just going to give it that NPR vibe, as I'm kind of talking about, all these other options, because, what I'm just sick and tired of Netflix. And so this is kind of going to be my real opportunity to really, and by Netflix, I mean all the big streaming services, Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, Paramount, blah, blah, blah. And so this is kind of just really going to be my opportunity to be able to, really find new streaming services that I'm wanting to register for and actually use, you know, and then sharing some of that information. And then it'd be fun just to try and do an NPR style. I mentioned school coming to a close. And so we're actually done here with different podcast episodes. I'm pretty much done with school with this semester, and I just wanted to actually talk about that for a little bit, just share that story of why I went back to school. So I actually already have my first degree. I graduated in 2019 with a double major in philosophy and political science, and I had done that because the plan was to go to law school. I had been in a car accident when I was 16. I'm saying this all backwards, but I promise this connects. I'd been in a car accident when I was 16, and then when I was 19, I had to go to court over it because the guy was suing for additional damages, and so I got to participate in that whole jury selection process and everything, and I just found it really, really interesting, and the lawyer took me out afterwards and he was like, hey, you know, you got a really good eye for this. You're a great jury selection. You should go to law school. And I was like, well, I don't know what else to do. At that point, I was started off in business because that's what everyone does. And then I was like, well, shit, I'll be Indiana Jones. So I switched to anthropology for like 6 weeks. And then I switched to philosophy and political science. And I did that because we didn't have a pre-law program. It turns out the world does not understand that philosophy and political science is pre-law. So that has always been very difficult to try and sell to people. And so it's not hard to sell it in person. It's hard to sell it on paper. And that's a part that has contributed to me going back to school. And so I graduated at this, had a professor who was like, if you don't like my class, don't go to law school. And like, we all believed him. So none of us went to law school. And, so I didn't know what to do. So I ended up working in student affairs for a couple of years, moved down to Texas for a grad program in student affairs. And then I left for all the usual reasons. By the way, 60% of people leave student affairs within the first 5 or 6 years after they graduate. That's nuts. That's a problem. And I don't feel like that industry recognizes or accepts that that's a problem. And there's a lot of reasons why 60% leave. And so pandemic gave me that time to rethink this. And so I left grad school and I started freelance web development, and I did a software development boot camp. And then I moved back to my home state and worked for a little bit more. And then I was like, no, I want to go full in on development work. So I went back to a community college. And so now I'm like working full time and going to school full time for software engineering. And that's why I went back. Like the student affairs field is extremely toxic in its expectations and what's on you. Like they're just overly relied on and way too underpaid. For instance, you have to have a master's to get into student affairs, and starting salaries are usually like $25,000 to $27,000. That, again, that's with a master's degree. That's absolutely nuts. And that's definitely one of the reasons people don't get into it, or stay, you know. And there's a huge bottleneck in it. And just kind of like all of everything you would imagine for human resources, but for students, is kind of what student affairs is. It's the professional development, it's personal development, it's community service projects, it's working with students to put on like concerts, and just everything that happens on campus that's fun for students is what student affairs employees do. And it's a lot of long hours, and very little recognition. And so I don't blame anyone who wants to get the hell out of there, but I'm pretty sure that everyone I went to grad school with is still in student affairs. And it's been two years, I think. No, 3 years since then. And they're all still doing student affairs. Fun story, I was the only one who dropped out of my cohort in grad school. And I lived with two of them through the entirety while they stayed in the program. And at the end, they were like, they said that they had gotten a speech from one of the professors about like, we're so proud of you guys. Every single one of you guys made it. Well, you know, except for one of you, but that's fine. And obviously one person, everyone knows exactly who that is. So that's nice. Anyways, that's why I went back to school. Because I like writing code and not dealing with bureaucratic bullshit in a college campus. I have a little section here called Insane Takes on the Internet. I was trying to save these so that I could make a full video out of this and just kind of have a reaction crew to it. But I don't want to hold off on these too long where like maybe they get deleted, which spoiler alert, the first one already got deleted. I wanted to just go ahead and go through these, and because I don't think I can do a full episode on it anytime soon. So I've got three Instagram videos I'm going to talk about here. First one is a video of a woman scraping like a thick layer of oil dirt from the back of a turtle, and she gets it removed. And the video is removed now too. But somebody commented, quote, "This is a waste of time. God made animals self-sufficient. They do not require human care or intervention." End quote. As if humans haven't irreversibly damaged the planet and disrupted every animal's natural existence in the process. Even if animals had evolved to be self-sufficient, which they haven't entirely, because that's why we have parasites and symbiotic relationships, we have absolutely handicapped their potential for self-reliance. This is just an asinine take, I think. I think it just shows you a baseline misunderstanding or lack of knowledge about the natural world, because if animals are truly self-sufficient, then there would be no symbiotic relationships or parasitic relationships, but those exist. So you easily lose that argument. It was just so dumb. But it was a wild argument in the comments. But less wild than the next one. Give me a moment. So this one, it's a video of a woman standing next to a guy, and the video text says, "When you get pregnant with a baby that isn't his and he still loves you." My first reaction was, what the bleep? Excuse me? Are you really airing that kind of dirty laundry out? Okay. But then the caption reveals that it's actually a surrogacy. And here's the wild comment. Somebody said, quote, surrogacy is child trafficking. So even though this is a joke, child trafficking is no joke. Wow. They doubled down on this too in the replies because they go, you are selling the child and it can't consent. Therefore, it's child trafficking. I couldn't imagine doubling down with this insane take. I can only think that this is like rage bait. And so somebody responded, what about people who can't have babies? Because that was my first response too. It was like, okay, well, hold up. The point of surrogacy is because you can't actually carry a baby to term. It wouldn't either be healthy for the mother or the baby. And so that person responded, so you should be allowed to sell children. Just completely ignoring the point of, I can't have a baby. I need surrogacy. And they're, yeah, that's why I think this might be rage bait. And that they're just like so stuck on this and like not like actually having an argument. They're just saying, ah, it's child trafficking. What? Who could possibly think that? Anyways, the final video is of a Mormon missionary getting back from his 2-year mission trip, and his family and his girlfriend are there. He walks up to them, and he and his mom hug first. And the quote is, the fact that his mom was ahead of you, the girlfriend, and he had to greet her first, vomit emoji. First of all, it's his mother. He's been gone for 2 years. He left at 18. You bet your ass that any reasonable, sensible person at 20 years old is going to hug their mother first. They raised them. What? And then another person claimed it was developmentally inappropriate and emotional incest. And I think maybe we've gone a little too far on that one. Maybe not quite emotional incest to hug your mom after not seeing her for 2 years and only getting to communicate via written letter. I don't know. Maybe not that bad. That's pretty wild to me. Let that one marinate for a little bit, maybe. Anyways, that's my insane takes from the internet that I've gathered for you. Instagram Reels are a very different place on the internet than YouTube Shorts or TikToks, because I don't see the same kind of bullshit on those platforms when looking for these things. Like I have to go to Instagram Reels for this stuff. Awful, just awful. Okay, our last one. This is just a short little theory of mine. I would love to know what other people think too, if you wanted to reach out for this one. My theory is that we severely lack empowered product managers focused on players in the gaming industry. And the key word there is empowered, meaning that these product managers are safe and comfortable and hold enough influence to stand up to executives and other mid-level managers and say, no, this is a bad idea. This does not work for the product, and this will upset players. I honestly think that this is one of the main problems in the gaming industry, at least from an outsider's perspective. I want to keep that key part in there, from an outsider's perspective, because I think that's why we see these issues with like Helldivers 2 and Escape from Tarkov and like live service games. I think if all these people had empowered product managers focused on the players, I don't think they would be running into as much of a problem as they seem to be running into in developing their video games and the continued content to bring in more profit, you know, but in a way that's sustainable and not going to piss off 70% of the player base. I mean, look at Helldivers 2. They're now requiring Steam players will now be required to connect their PlayStation account. And now the negative reviews are just, they're getting bombarded with them. It's all negative. Everyone's changing their reviews of it. And Escape from Tarkov, oh my God, we don't even have time to get into how big of a shit show that one is. Introducing a $150 expansion or something, and then not giving it to the players who bought the free DLC Forever package. There's way too much drama on the Escape from Tarkov thing to really get into it here. But I just feel like having strong product managers could have solved a lot of this. And maybe should have, if they didn't get the opportunity to speak up in that team meeting, I feel like maybe they should. Maybe they should be. It's a product manager's job to guide the development of the project. And I don't know. I don't feel like a good product manager would have thought these things are a great idea. So that's my theory. I think this theory can be applied to a lot of the bad gaming industry choices that have been made over the last couple of years, I guess. And I would love to know what everyone else thinks. If they have their own theories, or if they think this theory is valid, either way, that's what we got. My coffee is out, and it's just about time to head to the first farmers market of the year. I'm obsessed with farmers markets. I don't know why. I rarely ever buy anything, but I just love the getting up real early, grabbing a nice cup of coffee and strolling through all the markets and seeing everyone's homemade goods and getting once in a while, definitely getting some fresh bread. But I like always try to include farmers markets whenever I travel, either domestically or foreign. I've been in farmers markets in like the UK and Canada and around the US. Everywhere that I go, I try to go see a market. I don't know why I'm obsessed with them. I just am. And today is open the first day, and we're gonna get there just after opening bell. And I'm really excited. I love the Moscow Farmers Market. I really think it's like one of the best farmers markets I've ever seen. And you just wouldn't expect it from this small little town. But especially in the state of Idaho, I've been to farmers markets all over the place. Even the state capital does not compare to Moscow's. And so with my coffees out, I'm going to go ahead and get dressed so I can head down to the market. You guys enjoy your Saturday. And I hope you enjoyed your coffee you drank with me. This has been Alcove.